Good evening, Keith.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Keith Broders, your host on the Friends of Liberty Radio Network. And tonight we have a guest that is going to have a very exciting program for us tonight. Our guest is Dean Underwood. He is the founder and the creator of a very incredible program. It is called the Freedom University. And so I guess I'd like to welcome you on board here tonight, Dean. Thank you very much for your participation.
Good to be here, Keith.
Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and where this idea came from and what you're trying to accomplish. And then you can go ahead and tell us a little bit about your university and your curriculum. All righty?
All right. This all started really back in junior high school for me. Started thinking about this, but it was a very long process getting to Freedom University. And the purpose of Freedom University, which is an online, we also do, you know, physical classes here in Houston and in Texas. But the purpose of Freedom University, our own new online associate degree program, is to take people from basically a 3 or 4 year old intellect, which is way above the average person in society as far as a spiritual intellect, and take them to about the junior high school level, which, if that doesn't seem like very much, that's most people, even most Christians who spend their whole life studying the scriptures and studying theology, never get beyond usually about 4 or 5 years old in our society. And so we really start with the basics. There's only two cultures in the world. That's what the Bible teaches. You have two cultures. The one culture is based upon God's idea of living at peace with man and with God. And God's standard is, which is the true standard of law and government, is do not violate. That's basically, if you want to say it succinctly, is do not violate. And God expresses that in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are not necessarily God's law. It's an expression of God's law to a particular people at a particular time. But we can see God's law there. It's do not violate. No one has a right to take something from someone else, to violate another person. Do not take their sheep, God says. Do not move the boundary line of their property. Do not even think to take something from them. Don't even allow the idea to come into your head that you're going to have their wife or their daughter or whatever it is, to even think the thought of taking something from another person, of committing an act of violence, is to God a sin. And that's God's original idea of law and government and authority. And God's religion, if you want to call it a religion, God's religion is obedience to the truth, obedience to law and government, what law and government really is in its nature and character, which is do not violate. And in contrast to that, another culture comes out of the Garden of Eden. And that other culture is based upon Satan's idea that he actually got long, long ago. We don't know, millions, billions, trillions of years ago. We don't know how long ago. The idea that he originally got, which was violence. He got the idea, and it's quoted in the scriptures, his idea he thought of was, I will lift myself up. I will be like God. I will take God's throne. And he actually thought he would just put himself in place of God, make up his own standard, and rule over everything. And that's the idea that Satan brought into the Garden of Eden and gave to Eve. He told Eve that God's a liar. You can't base your life upon living peacefully with others. That won't work, is his argument. He says, you can't get ahead like that. God's trying to trick you. He's trying to hold you back. He's trying to keep you from having all the things you could have if only you would take it by force. And so Satan's argument to Eve is that God is a liar. God's way of living at peace won't work. And so you have to force your way in life. That's how you get ahead. You get ahead at the expense of others. And Satan's idea, really, it evolves into the natural implications of it is man becomes God. Man is God, and man makes up his own standard, his own law. And the law that men invariably make up, following after the pattern of Satan, the laws they make up are laws that give themselves permission to be apart from the real law and to violate people wholesale, others wholesale, in order to enrich themselves at other people's expense so that they can do evil, to do violence, but claim that they're obeying the law, the own law that they made up.
Well, one of the things that I want to mention here is that one of the authors, which I think we both greatly admire and respect, is Frederick Bastiat. And Frederick Bastiat basically said that we, the people, we essentially were the creations of a divine creator. We are sons and daughters of God, and that we are accountable and responsible to God for that which he has given to us. And that we, on the other hand, are the creators of our government. And the government cannot possess a power that the creator himself does not have. So in other words, Bastiat would say that we cannot grant to government the power to steal because we don't have the power to give.
That's exactly right. That the scriptures calls that rebellion against God. Everything on earth that calls it, that's politics, whether it calls itself or not, that's violent in nature. And the nature, and the, basically the nature of politics is the opposite of law and government. Politics represents systematic rebellion against God and against the natural law and government of the universe. Politics is really escaping, seeking to escape from reality, invent its own standard in direct contradiction to God's standard, and then use the standard that it's made up. It's a system of self-righteousness, a system of hypocrisy, in order to violate the real rules, the real laws wholesale. And all the while, try to maintain.
We're having a little problem with the transmission. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am.
Is there a chance that you can get on the landline? Because some people are having a little bit of difficulty understanding what you're saying.
You know, you just started breaking up on my end, too. No, actually, I'm not. There's not a landline here available where I'm at, actually.
Well, let's just go ahead and do the best we can. Hopefully, people will be able to get a clip of a transmission so that they can get your message. But go ahead,
or,
I'm sorry for the interruption.
Okay, you could just try calling me back, or I could try calling you back, too. I think that would probably be the way to go first.
Well, let's just go forward for right now.
Okay, because I can barely hear you speaking to me. I can just hear you breaking up pretty bad. Okay, let's see. Where were we? What's next? You got a question? Or?
No, just... I just, once again, I apologize for interrupting you, but like I said, I just...
Yeah.
So man
is making up his own standard, and he's following because he's following Satan's pattern of making up his own standard. And he uses that, what hypocrisy is, what self-righteousness is, it's a making up of our own standard, apart from reality. And so we take that false standard that we create, and that's the purpose of houses of legislature, is to make up laws that are not in compliance with God's laws. And even if the laws seem to be in compliance with God's laws superficially, what they're actually doing is establishing their own standard. They're establishing themselves as the standard. So even if they pass an anti-abortion bill, for example, in the U.S. Congress, they're not really backing up what God would say about that. They're really establishing their own authority apart from God over the right to rule over abortion. So even when they appear to be obeying God, they're not. Because they're not, if they're seem to be upholding God's standard, they're not upholding God's standard God's way. And they're always claiming that this is their authority. They don't need God's authority. They're establishing their own authority. And that's basically rebellion against God. That's what God is so angry at the world about. Because men won't obey the truth. They keep insisting on making up a fake, phony law and putting in place of the real law.
And they want them, basically, so many of the laws that we have today are not really laws at all. According to Marbury versus Madison, any law that is repugnant to the Constitution or the principles upon which our nation was founded are no law at all. And so they look like law, they smell like law, but if they violate the laws of nature and nature's God, they are not legitimate laws at all.
That's right. So in a sense, if a law is in the Constitution and it violates the real law, we could call it God's law, the laws of the moral laws of the universe, we're even to call it, then even if it's in the Constitution, essentially it's not a law. And then on top of that, if a law violates the Constitution, then again it's not the law. So on so many levels, the things that we're calling laws now are not laws. They don't obey man's law. They don't obey God's law. They're not obeying any law. They're really just men doing whatever they want to do and calling it law. And that's of law and government, that's violent anarchy. And
well, what we're doing,
law.
What's happening essentially is that our government, which was created to be a constitutional republic, has morphed into a democracy based upon the will of the majority. And so oftentimes today, right and wrong is not determined by the rule of law, but it's determined by the will of the majority of uneducated voters.
That's one way of saying it. Yeah, that's one aspect of it. They're always looking. Well, if the king is not God, then who's going to be God? They always try to find some false standard to make, and God keeps saying, "My law, my law, my law, not your law, my law." And God's law is do not violate.
Well, one of the things too is that people generally, on the one hand, they want their rights to be observed, but then with rights, there's something called responsibilities that are a companion to your rights. There's a responsibility and the accountability to God. And a lot of people, rather than being they don't want to be accountable, and so they give up many of their rights and their liberties so that somebody else will take the responsibility to do for them what they could and should be doing for themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's our sin nature. That sin nature is we want to everybody really, because of our sin nature, we want to find some way to live off of someone else for nothing
And that's one of Bastiat's great quotes. He says that government is that great fiction where everyone tries to live at the expense of everybody else.
You see, that's one place I would disagree with Bastiat. I think when we call that government, we're really confusing young minds, people with simple intellects, and keeping them from growing and learning truth. That's really, I call that politics, to distinguish it from government. If something is contrary to the nature and character of government itself, we shouldn't be calling it government. If something is committing a violent act, initiating an act of force, we should not be calling that government.
Government in and of itself is not good or bad. There is good government and there's bad government. And so by lumping it all into one category, I think is oversimplification. So I think you're exactly right. I think that we need to elaborate a little bit on that and make it clear that it's the perversion of the law that is what is causing the problem.
That's exactly right. See, there's really two views, the two cultures that come out of the garden. There's two viewpoints there. God's viewpoint and the viewpoint of free people who have something of an enlightened intellect, a mature intellect, they recognize that freedom is not freedom from government and law. Actually, you can't have freedom without government and law. It's government and law really that creates a social order where freedom can exist. Freedom is freedom from fake government and law, things calling itself government and law which are not. And that's the problem. And that's the nature of evil. Evil's nature is to take control of society by perverting the very government and law that's supposed to be guaranteeing people's freedom.
I have a caller here. Let me, Dean, go to this area code and see who we have on the line here. I think they have something they'd like to say. The area code that I'm clicking on here is area code 734. In just a minute here, it seems like for some reason or another, I'm having a little trouble getting connected here. Go ahead, Dean. I'm trying to connect with this area code 734. For some reason or another on my switchboard, I'm having some difficulty getting this connection. So this is really
The purpose of Freedom University is really to take people that have, in our society, the average sort of spiritual intellect, if you will, people being able to see from God's perspective is like one year old or some 2 years old. Even people who call themselves Christians, their average age is about 2 or 3, and the average pastor is about a 4-year-old mentally, because this whole system, world accreditation has been set up, the political system has subsidized all these schools and really taken control of them. And what they've done is they've dumbed down the whole society over a period of several generations. We were twice as educated as we are now about higher things, but, law, government, and authority 100 years ago than we are now. We were twice as educated 200 years ago than we were 100 years ago. And that's the problem. A dumbed-down people, a people with a 2-, 3-, 4-year-old intellect, there's no way they can create and maintain a free society. It's an impossibility. You can't do it.
Well, the German philosopher Goethe said that the most helpless of all slaves is the man who falsely believes that he is free. And I think our system of public education is doing everything they possibly can to control the people. The best way to control the people is to take away from them the ability to think critically and to think outside the box. The schools are more interested. The schools that we have are not public schools. They are government education or government indoctrination centers where children are basically being trained to be compliant and be obedient. I heard a quote the other day that I really liked. It said that morality is obedience to God. And I'm sorry, let me back up. It says that morality is obedience to God. The progressive schools today are teaching kids that.
Whenever I'm speaking and I have black kids in the audience, I like to shock everybody in the class by saying, like looking at the blacks in particular and saying that you're actually more of a slave today than your ancestors were 250 years ago. And, it's like mouths kind of dropping because at least they had mind enough to know that they were slaves. They at least knew that they were in slavery and they need to escape from something where most people today don't even know they're slaves. If you don't even know you're a slave, that means your education has not yet even begun. You haven't even begun to develop an intellect, really, so far. You're in a deep state, really, of slavery.
The degree that you have in liberty that's available through your university?
Right. Yeah, the degree is, the degree is really taking people from, a 3-4-year-old intellect and taking them to about a junior high school level, which is, if you're really at a 4- or 5-year-old intellect, spiritual intellect, and in our society, you're in the top 5th percentile is where you're at. And if you make it to a junior high school level, you really reach a point where you become a real danger to the world system. You're understanding the difference between law, what real law and government is, and all the stuff that calls itself law and government. That's actually in rebellion against God. When we're using the term, when we're calling things government, when we're calling things law, which all the stuff that's not calls itself that, but when we point to it and say that it's government and use those terms for it, we're really saying that it's God approved, because government is approved by God. And so when we're calling these things that are not real government, when we're calling them government, we're really sanctioning them as if they had got sanctioned, which they do in some sense, because God, the scriptures teach, gives men over to their own way, to basically their own rebellion against God, to making up their own standard. When they're too corrupt and evil, and when they're too deceived, and when they're too intellectually immature to understand what God's standard is, it says that God gives those men over to their own way, their own standard, to make up their own standard and live with the consequences.
Well, our founding fathers made it very clear in the early days that in order for us to be able to keep the freedom that they had earned through the Revolutionary War, that the people would need to be morally strong, that they would need to be eternally vigilant, and that a society without virtue, or a society essentially without God's law, is incapable of maintaining freedom.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the whole political system setting up, and we were talking about this the other day, where they got that whole political system, control school system from Russia and so forth, and it spread all over the world. And the whole purpose of that is to interrupt people's education, is to stop the education process from going forward. And that's where people have lost their education. And people, whenever I speak to people and they're telling me, using language like, oh, I want my children to get an education. I want them to go and get a master's degree or a doctorate degree. And they're talking about the universities. They're not getting an education from those universities. They're getting schooled, and that's very helpful in many ways. They're learning a trade. That's very helpful, but it's not an education. They don't have an education themselves. I know they don't have an education if they're speaking in that way.
Well, for one thing, the schools are not teaching kids how to think. They're teaching them what to think. We need to teach kids, children, how to solve problems. The man who can solve another man's problem is worth his weight in gold. I do finally have a connection here for area code 734. Would you please identify yourself and tell us where you're calling from?
Hi, Sherry from Michigan.
Hi, Sherry.
Thank you very much, Sherry, for calling in.
Yes. These are exciting times. Well, it sounds like your topic of the evening is God's law and man's law and the illusion, and people do not have the ability yet on the majority factor to distinguish which is what. But
that's
real easy and simple to state. It comes into a governing stance, and I was going to Google govern, how it breaks down into the breakdown of the word in Latin or in another foundation of how you distinguish the making up of a word. But morally and common sense-wise, to govern and to be in standard of God's law, is peace is the ultimate aspect of this planet. Does anyone agree with that or disagree?
Yeah,
in fact, that the highest order would be peace.
Actually, Keith and I were just talking about that yesterday, actually, and yes, you're right. You're halfway there. Peace is the halfway.
But my point being, how do you know? How do you get to that point? How do you understand? How is it to be established through, like, what you're talking about, to educate? Now, also, you can break down what that means as far as the breakdown of that word. But to educate and to understand peace, it would be to bring it within oneself. And to, there's a word to employ. If you look up the word employ, it means to bring oneself to the highest understanding, to draw the best of oneself out. So basically, our true job here on this planet is to employ one's highest consciousness to bring out the betterment of one's self, one's being, which is in harmony with law of nature, which is a representative of God in harmony. It's like a marriage, a mutual marriage. Once you establish that connection within your own heart and soul, then you extend it to a family member or to a neighborhood, a community, and you branch out from there. But it starts collectively within your own heart and soul. And it's like a vibration. You can't see it. It's like talking to animals. You don't understand that they don't speak English, but they're speaking a very high order of nature. So they're very high intellect, and they have different jobs. People don't really respect the language of the unknown hearing, the spiritual language, and that's holding this planet together right now. But your inner sense, you become vigilant, and your due diligence. Now, you hear the attorneys talking about due diligence constantly, you know, in terms of study or in their case and things like that. But I have come to know on a deep level what really due diligence is. I am so due diligent not to do harm. I am so due diligent to do no harm. And that means to establish peace. So in one's lawful documentation into the court system to represent the highest order of nature and God in law, one has to perpetrate into a maze beyond the limitations of language. Now, they're perpetrating law against harm. They're doing it to harm. So they're actually going against the natural order. And that is taking away from the peace, which is
Sherry, I hate to interrupt you, but, you know, I'd really like to have you focus on asking a question rather than doing your own little thing. People have called in to hear about the Freedom University and to hear what Dean has to say. And if you ask questions of him, that's great. But I'd appreciate if you could limit your comments to a certain extent so that we can focus on what Dean is trying to achieve.
Well, how do we get started, and where can we start learning this?
I would say this. Go to his website. Go to his website. He has a course. The curriculum starts by taking a quiz, trying to find out exactly where you are in terms of your understanding about freedom and individual liberty and personal responsibility. You take a quiz. You score a quiz, and then you're given an opportunity to take his first course. His first course is relatively short. You email your questions and answers to him. They respond. They let you know how you did, and then they give you the password for the next test and the next curriculum, and it goes through a hierarchy of 10 different classes. So let me turn the time back to Dean so that you can kind of let Sherry know exactly how people can use your website into university to be able to develop an understanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. I would really agree with virtually everything you said there. You said a lot. I would agree virtually with all of it. And you can go to freedomuniversity.org, and everything's free. It's a real ministry. It's a true ministry. everybody at Freedom University, you know, we do this as a ministry. We all have some other job or some other way to make money. We don't make money any money off of freedomuniversity.org and off the university. And she was asking the question about, too, she was talking about peace and that peace is the beginning. She's right, peace is the beginning. And peace is the outer boundary of God's kingdom. And that's what the expression of God's law is in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are saying, do not violate. Don't violate. Don't use force against another person to get your way. That's God's minimum standard to have a relationship with him. If we haven't done that yet, if we are violating people or participating in violence against others and we're telling ourselves that we have a relationship with God or that we're Christian or whatever we want to call ourselves, the scripture said we're lying to ourselves. God's minimum standard, when we come to the outer boundary of God's kingdom, God's inner kingdom, where we're in obedience to God, God's minimum standard is that we, in order to enter in, is we have to stop living by force against others. Now, that's not the end. That's God's law there. We come into obedience to God's standard of law. Then God is calling us to come on to love. Love is really the goal. Because the closer we get to love, truly being filled with love and loving others, we don't even remember what the law is anymore. We don't need to know what the law is. We're loving others and giving of ourselves freely to others. And the world system that politics represents, that the satanic order represents, it's all the way back down the scale from love, on the opposite end of the scale from love, back down below peace, all the way down into men making up their own standard, men thinking they're gods, doing whatever they please. And 90%+ of Christians today will tell you that they're free from God's law because they're living in grace. And, I'm living in grace. I don't need to worry about God's law anymore. They're deceiving themselves. They're not. They haven't gone on beyond God's law, stopped violating people, and go on to loving people. They've turned their backs on God 180 degrees. They've gone all the way back down under God's law, and they've gone into total rebellion against God, making up their own laws and doing whatever they please, a direct violation of God's law. And that's something that Christians desperately need to understand. Peace is the minimum. It's God's standard.
Dean, about how many hours is your course? You said that the first course takes about how long?
Somebody can probably knock the first course out probably in an hour. You know, questions and all. It's
and
real
simple. And then the second one is a little bit longer.
Yeah, each one basically doubles. So by the time you get to, you know, class 6 and 7, you've got your work cut out for you, but it's well worth it. But it gets better and better. It gets deeper and deeper. It's the first class is just basic sort of libertarian principles. Libertarianism, apart from, you know, people who even think of themselves as atheist libertarians, they're basically taking God's law order and saying, I accept it, and leaving God out and not giving God credit. So they've got part of it, but they're just not giving God credit. And so they've actually got it right. Most of it they have right. And class 1 and 2 is covering a lot of that material, mostly libertarian-like material that all libertarians would agree with. And then, but as the class goes on, the libertarian, even like an atheist libertarian, and then the Christian libertarian and Christians in general, who all would disagree with each other, they all get to a point where they realize they're all part looking at the same thing from different angles.
You know, Dean, one of the things that we talked about the other day that I'd like to maybe ask you to talk a little bit about is the how the story of this great folk hero Robin Hood has changed over the years. And maybe you could tell people a little bit about how the progressive have used Robin Hood essentially to further their agenda.
Yeah, it's the same way they change everything. And the Bible teaches how this whole thing works. And if two begins with Satan, Satan always transforms himself into an angel of light. So you're actually doing evil and doing violence, but you want to make it look like you're doing good. That's how you can get away with it. And so evil always takes all this, everything that's good, any kind of good knowledge, and twists it and turns it around backwards. And what they do is with a Robin Hood is, Robin Hood was, and at least to some great degree, upholding a true standard of law and government. He would go out and rob the tax collectors who were robbing the people of their rightly earned money, and he was giving the money back to the people that they had stolen it from. And you can see that in old movies, you know, from the old black and white movies and even, you know, movies in the 40s and 50s and so forth of Robin Hood. You can see it there. You can see it in the original story. But when you look at the original versions and the way it's interpreted today, they make it out like Robin Hood is, you know, following Lenin and
and Stalin, and he's taking money from rich people. He's joining the tax collectors, helping them take money from rich people and giving it to the poor people through some kind of socialist program, which is pretty close to the opposite of what he actually was.
Well, that's exactly the way the progressives want to be. Now, one of the great libertarian spokesmen of today is G. Edward Griffin, and he talks a lot about the fact that the paradigm of left and right, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, is really misleading, and that he believes that there's really only two groups of people that we need to be concerned with, and that is the people who support the principles of individualism and individual responsibility under God, and those who believe in the supremacy of the group or the collectivist mentality, which is those who believe that the people do not have to be accountable to God because God doesn't exist, and that they basically that man is God, and that man has the opportunity to do whatever he feels is for the greater good of the greater number. So we have collectivism on the one hand, and we have individualism on the other hand. It seems like in all things, you know, one of the things it tells us in the Bible, that there's going to be opposition in all things.
Yeah, that's right. And people call themselves left, and they call themselves right and middle of the road, and they never think about what they're left of or what they're right of. They're really just comparing themselves to each other. They don't have any real marker set, no moral, real moral standard that they're placing there. That's why what's conservative, you know, what was liberal 30, 40 years ago, now the conservatives proclaim it, and they think they're conservative proclaiming what the liberals were proclaiming a generation ago. They have no real standard. What the left and right really is they're the left and the right side of the road of rebellion against God, the road to destruction that Jesus talks about. That's really what they are. They're the people that have turned their backs 180 degrees to God. They're going down and away from God, and they're only arguing over, do we go a little to the left, or a little to the right, or down the middle of our rebellion against God? That's the only argument they have. And the thing to understand is not that you're left or right, but that's whether you're either real or you're fake. And 90%+, 95% or so of people who call themselves liberals and conservatives, they're on that road of rebellion against God, and they're just mindless. They don't have any idea what they're doing. They're in total rebellion against God, making up their own standard, and God is not pleased with them. They're the people that Jesus talks about in the end times, and it's just, you know, scary verses to me. And Jesus says, you know, depart from me. It says that many come to Jesus. Many, it says. I picture that as billions, quite frankly. And Jesus says, tells these billions of people that come to him, he says, depart from me. I never knew you. And they say, but Lord, Lord, we did all these wonderful works in your name, and we did all this in your name. And he says, depart from me, you workers of iniquity. I never knew you. And that's who these people are. They're proclaiming themselves and putting Jesus' names on violent, corrupt, evil acts, and they think they're pleasing God when they're doing it. And God is not pleased.
Let me just ask the listening audience, any of you that would like to speak to Dean, if you press number 1 on your keypad, that will alert me and let me know that you would like to participate by asking Dean a question about his program. I personally have taken the first 3 courses, and the questions are not the typical standardized test type questions. They are very thought provoking questions. That the purpose of the questions is to delve into our minds to determine to the level of our understanding. And so Dean begins by covering the basic principles of human rights. Where did human rights come from? What is the source of our rights? And he goes into the concept of the supremacy of the group and the whole concept of the initiation of force. He goes over equality and inequality under the law, freedom and coercion. I mean, all sorts of these very fundamental principles that are the basic foundation. And once you have gone through that, you move up the hierarchy and learn concepts which are a little bit more in depth, a little bit higher level of understanding and intellect. Well, right now, Dean, we don't have anyone else right now that has indicated that they have a question specifically to ask of you. So I'm just going to turn the time back to you again and just let you proceed. When did you begin your university? When did this actually come online?
We've been teaching Freedom University. It really started probably like 13 years ago.
as far as an actual physical school. And we always called it Liquid University because we never had any plans of actually having a campus and incurring those kind of expenses. So we would always rent space in other places or churches or so forth would give us free space. And so we did have very little in the way of expenses so that we could keep everything free forever. That's our plan. And as far as the online, we really only developed the online class this last year and got it up. And so it took us about a year to develop the curriculum for that. And it's I really like it in that it's so automatic. I mean, so many people can join the class and go through at their own pace and their own time. And it's so efficient time-wise for me. And as you were saying, they cover the basics of collectivism versus individualism and so forth at the beginning of the class online. And as they go through, once you get to class 3, 4, and 5, you're getting the material that you've never seen before. And you're really starting to learn that many ideas that you've always thought were contradictions in these fights that, like an atheist libertarian will have against a Christian libertarian and against Christians in general, you're starting to learn that what they've been fighting over is really their own side of a sort of a 3D view. And what they learn to, the goal is to learn to see the whole picture, the whole 3D, and you realize you're more or less having a silly argument over one slice and not seeing the whole picture. Once you see the whole picture, you really realize it's all part of the same argument. It's all part of the same idea. And it has a tendency of bringing all these groups together in their viewpoint.
Well, one of the things that I've observed when you start talking about the left and the right and Republicans and Democrats is that their positions are based upon their personal feelings, not necessarily God's law, but they're doing it based upon what they think is right and what they think is wrong rather than what God has proclaimed is right and wrong. I think that, for example, in the case of the Republicans and Democrats, some people line up and say that they're for abortion or they're against abortion, or they line up on issues rather than on principles. And I think this is where a lot of the problem lies is that when you build your political system based upon the will of the majority or the direction the political winds are blowing, you're building your structure on a sand foundation. And as tells us in the scriptures that, if you're going to build something that is going to prevail, it has to be built upon a rock. And the rock is the principles of the laws of nature and nature's God. So everything needs to be evaluated on the basis of, is this going to promote liberty, or is this going to promote more government and more control?
Yeah, what you just said, I mean, all of this stuff, everything goes right back to the garden. It's really the most important aspect to understand. And that's exactly what Satan is teaching to Eve. Why would she go by God's standard? What right does he have to make up a standard? Where is he getting his standard from? Why don't you make up your own standard and make yourself gods and do whatever you want? That's the rebellion. That's the very, essentially, when Satan made that argument to Eve, he downloaded into Eve a virus into her mind. And that virus then she couldn't control it. It took over her mind. And it says that now, once men are infected with that idea, they don't have any natural immunity against it, and all men can think of now is violence. They just can't think of anything else. In fact, every thought that politics has, that politicians have in general, that everyone involved in politics and political parties, every single thought they have is violence. They just can't think of anything else. Everything they do is violence. And freedom, a free society, is a society that escapes from politics, escapes from violence by escaping from the systematic violence which calls itself politics, or it calls itself government and law, which is really politics, not government and law at all. It's really the rebellion against true law and government, pretending to be something that it's not.
Just keep rock on and rolling, my friend. You're doing great. Appreciate your comments so far, and I'm sure that those that are listening are gaining a great deal from your insight.
That's the thing that people who are spiritually dead and have too young of an intellect to understand, that's the thing they have great trouble understanding, is that when the scriptures often refer to telling men to obey law and authority, that is a general statement, and it's true. We're to obey all law and authority.
Legitimate law.
Probably, that's the problem. God expects us to obey
that law and authority that we're able to understand. And someone who's spiritually dead, there's no way they can tell that Adolf Hitler is not authority and not government. They can't discern it. And someone who is a genuine, reborn Christian person alive and they're going to heaven and all that, there's no way that person who still has a 1 and 2 year old, 3 year old intellect, they can't discern that Adolf Hitler is not authority, that he's rebellion against government. And so God accredits, essentially, someone with a 1 or 2 year intellect, he accredits it righteousness to them when they're obeying false authority because they simply can't discern any better. It's like if you have two families, let's say you have two families, and the one family is a normal, good family, the guy goes to work in a normal family. The other family is a family of criminals. They rob and steal and plunder as a way of life. And the police come to arrest the people at the bad family, but they don't arrest the two-year-old or the three-year-old in the family because he doesn't know any better. He didn't discern it. And, in fact, the two-year-old obeying his evil parents is exactly the same as the two-year-old obeying his good parents because the two-year-old can't discern one from another. And God expects us in the same way when we're spiritually dead and we're spiritually babies, we have to obey even evil authority because we simply can't discern any difference. But God is always a calling his people, his leaders, to teach people and bring them to maturity so that more and more people can discern. And as we come to discern what real authority is, then we're required to stand against false authority because we've developed the ability to discern it. So a free society is only possible because people are not just awake, alive spiritually and awake intellectually, but increasingly awake and mature intellectually, where we can actually discern the difference between real law and government and what satanic people following Satan's example and making up their own standard are putting forward as law and government.
Dean, let me ask you this in regards to your curriculum. Let's just pretend for just a moment that all of the pastors throughout the country were to go through courses 1 through 10. Don't you think that the pastors of America, in many ways, hold the key to the restoration of our constitutional republic?
Oh, it's the only way it'll ever be restored. The only way. The church is really God's church. I want to distinguish. In the same way, there's false law and false government, and there's true law and true government. There's also a false church and a true church, and you can recognize the difference between the two because God's church is obeying God's standard, and the world's church is agreeing with the overthrow of God's standard. And
what percentage of the churches do you think that are essentially on the planet are operating under God's law rather than man's law?
I really don't think there's any church denomination or church congregation that you can say is 100% God's church. It's like the parable when Jesus talks about the parable of the sower, and he sowed the good weed in his field, and now the enemy, the devil, has come and sowed the tares. The weeds and the wheat are all mixed up, and it's often very difficult. In fact, the two-year-old, the genuinely reborn person who has a two-year-old intellect, they're virtually impossible to tell from a person who has not been born at all or still in their sin, still in darkness. You virtually can't tell the difference. The only way you can really discern is the pastors go through the classes, you're going to be able to discern who has a true heart, because it's not going to be intellect. It's not intellect is really not the problem. It's more the heart. The reason why people don't get educated is because they don't have the heart for it. They don't want to know the truth. Because the Bible says they want to live in sin. They want to do evil, they want to violate other people, but they want to call it righteousness when they're doing it. That's why they're making up their own laws.
Well, I think a lot of pastors don't want to submit. They don't really want to submit. They don't want to turn loose.
That's exactly right.
They have their own false paradigms that they're living inside of boxes that they've constructed for themselves. They've created these paradigms, these warm, comfortable boxes that they live in, where they basically define who they are and for what they believe and what they think the world is and what the world should be, and they come up with this paradigm, and any time someone comes along like you or I and throws in some new information and challenges that belief system, it creates a situation called cognitive dissonance, where the people become very upset, and they attack the messenger who's bringing them new information because it upsets their proverbial apple cart.
That's exactly right. And the scriptures say that you can tell the difference between the true pastors or true anybody and the false, because They're more interested in men pleasing, saying what's popular with everybody, than they are obeying the truth. That's really what they're about. They're about remaining popular with people. They don't want people calling them bad names and so forth, and they're not willing to put up with that. So they go along with whatever people will agree with the most. The scriptures call it, you know, call them men pleasers. It says that people gather unto themselves teachers that will tickle their ears and tell them what they want to hear rather than telling the truth.
Yes, that's true. You're not going to get nearly as many people to put money in the tray if you chastise them and call them to repentance.
Yeah, only because that's the only reason it being because you have a majority of people there. That's basically proof that you have a majority of people that don't want the truth, that have no really interest in the truth. That's why they would stop putting, if you had a majority of people there that want the truth, they would put more money in if you're telling them the truth. So it wouldn't be something to be afraid of.
If there's anyone listening, if there's anyone listening on your computers at home, you can call into our line, which is area code 347-884-9499. If you call that number and then you press the number 1 on your keypad, that will let me know that we have a new caller and that new caller would like to make a comment to our speaker, Dean Underwood. And any of those of you that are already on the line listening, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please feel free to do so by pressing 1 on your keypad, okay? Thank you very much. The ball is back in your court.
Okay. Free society is only possible because every person who develops a level of maturity, they answer God's call to that level of maturity, and they stand for what law and government is to their ability of understanding. And, for example, in a free society, if someone makes a law somehow, number one, in a free society, there's no legislators making laws. It doesn't work like that. The object is to recognize law and proclaim law. But if there are people calling themselves legislators, they're going to be openly proclaiming that this is God's law, not our own law. We're not making up our own standard. What the legislators in our society don't do, they're openly saying, this is our own law. They're in no way giving God credit. And that's good because it's not his law anyway. But in a free society, for a society to be free, every person at every level of enforcing and upholding law has to resist evil. And, for example, if they pass a law against sawed-off shotguns or whatever, and they say they do it for good reason, but whatever the law they pass, if it's not a real law, if it's inherent violent in nature, taking away someone's freedom, it's the policeman's duty to, when he sees that so-called crime going on, to say, I can't enforce this law. I can't do it because this is not a law. He has to, in a free society, it's only possible because people are free enough to understand that this is not a law, so the policeman doesn't enforce it. And so the law can't be enforced because the policeman won't do it. And even if the policemen do it, if they're so dumbed down and corrupt that they do it, it's the judge's duty when the policeman brings the person into court to say, I can't uphold this law because it's against the nature and character of law itself. And so even if the policeman would go along with it, they can't bring it to court. So there's no point in the policeman enforcing it anymore because the judges won't uphold it. But when you get a society dumbed down as we are, and where folks, people are just basically spiritually dead and intellectually so retarded, like a level of a 1 or 2 year old child, it's like we're 30, 40, 50 years old, but we have the spiritual intellect of a 1 year old, 2 year old, you can make up any law you please. I mean, I don't care how inherently violent in nature it is, and people will just go around calling it a law. The policeman will arrest you for it, take you into court, and the judge will sit there and go, you didn't know this was law. Well, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And that's something else good to point out, is that phrase, ignorance of the law is no excuse. I mean, its original meaning, its original purpose thousands of years ago, is to remind people in authority, whether they're a policeman, some kind of official, or judge, or whatever they are, that ignorance of the law is no excuse. No one ever has a right to make up whatever law they please. Laws are only laws if they obey the nature and character of law itself and compliance with the nature and character of law itself. You can't just make up and whatever law you want, uphold whatever law you want. But we are in such a dumbed-down state today that they bring someone to court for a law that's not a law. The person is being violated by the person in authority, and the judge says to him, the person being violated, oh, ignorance of the law is no excuse, meaning you didn't keep up with the latest violations of the law that we passed. you didn't keep up with what the laws we're making up in violation of the real law, and so that's no excuse. You should keep up with whatever the latest violent acts that we're proclaiming as the law, and that's totally contrary to the whole meaning and purpose of that phrase to begin with, to warn people in authority that they can't make up their own laws.
Dean, I've got a caller in here, a fellow Texan, okay? Area code 435. Good evening, Chuck.
Oh, this is Wayne in Utah.
Wayne, I'm sorry. I got screwed up there. I thought that this was my friend Chuck in Texas. This is Wayne.
Nope,
he's from parts unknown.
I'm Oregon/Utah. I'm Wayne from Crane, Oregon. I'm just here visiting in Utah. Anyway, I am of the opinion that phrase that you just used, ignorance of the law is no excuse, that is primarily for people who are in law enforcement. It is their job to enforce the law. Therefore, it is they who are held accountable to that law or that phrase of ignorance of the law is no excuse. Those of us who are not involved in law enforcement are not held to that. Is that your understanding?
No, I would say that's going. I would say that's an improvement over the way they use it now. No, but the way it should be used is that it's a warning against everyone in authority, to the policeman, to the judge, to everyone in any position of authority, really to everybody, because we're all really in positions of authority.
Right.
In any society. So we all have a responsibility to stand against something that's not lawful. That's really
right.
What the statement is. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. We can never participate in a violent act and say, oh, I didn't know.
Right.
Because ignorance of the law is no excuse, and it's especially for policemen and judges, because it's telling the policeman that because something is in your law book, your rule book, that doesn't mean you have a right to enforce it. You're responsible to know the law yourself, what the inherent nature of law is. And if there's a law in your rule book that is contrary to the nature of law, it's contrary to God's law, you have a responsibility not to enforce that law, even if it costs you your job or costs you your life. And the same thing goes for the judge. You can't be upholding, you have to know the law, and you have to uphold that law, the law. You can't be upholding laws that are contrary to the nature of law itself.
Mm-hmm. This brings up one thing, too, that I would like you to discuss very briefly, and that is the whole concept of jury nullification, where individuals not only have a right to determine the guilt or innocence of the accused individual, but they also have the right to determine whether the law is just or whether the law is unjust, if it is consistent with God's law or if it is not.
That's exactly right. Jury nullification is just last resort. The jury's doing what the policeman should have done, the judge should have done, all these different people at different levels should have done. It should have never gone to court in the first place. And the jury's there doing what everyone else should have done, and they're there as a last resort saying, this is not a law. This person can't be convicted because it's not in obedience to the law itself.
Or there is no victim in this crime.
Exactly. Well, that's part of it. Yes, that's exactly right. And the policeman should have done that. It's the policeman's duty to have done that and not brought them, not arrested them or charged them in the first place. And it's the judge's job to throw it out. If that doesn't happen, it's left to the jury, which is this ultimate check on the court to make sure it's obeying the real law, not just any law it's making up.
Dean, this is the caller that I was telling you about earlier. This is my friend Chuck from Texas. At least for now, he's from Texas. Let me see if I can get him connected here. I'm having a little problem with my switchboard in terms of activating callers. Let's see. Here we go. Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Dean. Chuck Peterson over here in Wimberley. I'm finding a big similarity here with your course, maybe with Dr. Del Tackett from the Focus on the Family, the Truth Project. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not sure with that. I'm not sure about that particular project, but I know quite a bit about the Focus on the Family. In fact, I was a big fan of theirs when I first became a Christian when I was going on 30 years old. I used to be a huge Focus on the Family fan, but I would actually disagree with Focus on. I would disagree with Focus on the Family on some things.
Oh, I think here and there. We happen to at our church here in Waverly, we happen to take that 13-week course that Dr. Del Tackett came up with. He's a another good old Texas boy from up in the Panhandle, and I think he was just really inspired by the Holy Spirit to put that course together and so forth. And actually, they're doing it online on Facebook free too now. And I, you know, when we did, when Anna was on Keith, you know, a couple weeks ago, and you got into the discussion about the Bible quite heavily, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went ahead, I was going to try and get in then, but I couldn't, but I went ahead and emailed Anna to see if she had heard about it and that, and she had very much. In fact, a lot of her friends that she associates with, I have taken the project course and that, but I'm enjoying it very much, Dean, so I'm just going to turn it back to
have you visited his website yet, Dean?
I haven't visited it, but I certainly will. It'll be good for me when I get out on the road and that, and have a little more time there and so forth.
Well, if everyone that is listening to the call this evening, or if you're listening on the archived basis at some future point in time, I would encourage all of you to go to the Freedom University website, www.freedomuniversity.com or .org?
.org.
Go there, take the freedom quiz to find out where you stand as far as your understanding of freedom, and then go ahead and get started. Take course number one. When you finish that and your test is scored, if you pass, you will be given the password to enter into course number two, and you can move right up the line. I've taken the first three courses, and I'm just anxiously awaiting the opportunity to go in and start my fourth course. This is really exciting, and it's really fun to learn. I was a school teacher for many, many years, and I felt really uncomfortable in education because I felt that the schools were not really rewarding creativity. They were trying to promote conformity. They wanted all of the kids to look the same, talk the same, be taught the same lessons at the same time, draw the same conclusions. It's really a form of mass indoctrination. And I'd kind of like you to talk for a few minutes, if you would, Dean, about the Prussian system of education and the goals of the Prussian educational system, which was embraced in our country approximately in the 1840s. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was really just a ideal system for politics to adopt from Prussia. They had the idea there was that people are thinking too independently, and when we send them out into battle, out in the army, they get into the thick of battle, and they're worrying about preserving their own life. If the bombs are blowing up around them and so forth, they're going to dive into a hole, or they're going to run back and try to save their own life. And they thought, how can we create individuals that will just blindly follow whatever orders they're told and just willingly sacrifice their life without any thought of themselves? And that was the whole idea of the Prussian education system, was to train people to serve politics, the political system, whoever was in the political office, as if they were God, and with a religious fervor. And once all these political systems around the world, all these different political orders around the world in America and England and France, once they heard about this Prussian system, they just thought it was a wonderful idea. I mean, this is how we're going to train everybody to follow us, without thought, and it just spread all over the world. And that's what it was for in the beginning. It was to indoctrinate people from the beginning and really to interrupt the inter-education system. Americans were the best educated people in the world 250, 300 years ago, even before we were a country. And now we're almost as dumbed down as most people. I think the average American is still more educated than many other people in the world. But we've lost most of it at this point, largely because of that indoctrination system that we call the schools, which is the opposite of being educated, really.
It's an indoctrination system. And Joseph Goebbels, who was the minister of propaganda for Nazi Germany, he obviously knew that the importance of controlling the youth in the schools, controlling the thinking of the youth, because he knew that if you control what a man is thinking, you can control his behavior. And Goebbels also made the statement that it's the role and it's the responsibility of the state to control the formation of public opinion. And that is precisely why the mass media is owned and operated by the same group of international elitists that control the political parties.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, that's actually right. That's the whole deeper, darker aspect of it. Getting, I think, down the road toward Satan's underlying kingdom, how he's controlling everything, basically. and you really get into some dark stuff going on there.
Well, I think one of the things that I noticed that is very interesting is that schools, you know, make rules and regulations, and they want the kids to obey. And in most schools, the definition of a good student is a student that does what he's told. You know,
being obedient,
doing what you're told is more important than thinking.
That's exactly right. And all the tests are designed to see if you're a follower, see if you're following the system. And it's really an ingenious system in a way. People say the school system has failed. It hasn't. It's done exactly what it was supposed to do from the beginning. And it basically finds people with good intellects, generally good intellects, that can be intellectual in some superficial kind of sense, but who are trained or lack some ability to read between the lines and kind of see what's not being said. If you're someone who will go through all the training and you finish high school and you're ready to go on to college and you haven't noticed that there's something going on behind the curtain, that you haven't learned to read between the lines, you're perfect for college. You go into college and you get your master's degree and doctorate degree, and they put you in all positions of authority in the society because you never got your snap. You never noticed what wasn't being said. And you're, according to them, you're perfect for all positions of authority to lead the society.
Well, one of the purposes of education today in the colleges and the universities is to create debt slaves so that virtually everyone who gets out of college is immediately deeply in debt.
They're intellectual slaves first, philosophical slaves. And once you have people that are slaves that don't know they're slaves, you can enslave them in any way you want. You can do anything with them you want to do. They're just malleable.
Anyone else that would like to speak to Dean, you can hit number one on your keypad. Those of you that have already spoken, if you would press one on your keypad, that will basically take you out of the position of asking more questions. And then if you'll come back and hit one again, then I'll know that you would like to make another comment. Okay, so that would be very helpful. It looks like Wayne, I think, would like to say something more. Wayne, who is currently in Utah, I just am trying to activate you. Go ahead, Wayne. Would you have something else to say?
Yes, you guys, you brought up some very interesting points about, the teachers wanting to keep you in a box. I was very fortunate. I had some teachers that tried to get us to think outside the box. And probably my very number one favorite teacher was Tom Patterson in Salem, Oregon. He taught me in sixth grade how to deal with corruption in business. You put a lemon sign on top of your car, or put a lemon sign, or you do whatever. One time I launched a helium balloon against Bell and Howell when they screwed us over on those color television courses. I was very fortunate to have some people that taught us to think outside the box, and it has been very worthwhile. We're getting ready to do it on the on some other public issues, go public with some of this stuff. But it has been just a worthwhile gold mine having teachers who taught us to think outside the box. I don't know what they're doing anymore. I know I had some very corrupt teachers also. My sister had one who was a member of the Communist Party and tried sucking her in. I won't get into all that other stuff, but I grew up in a very socialistic school element. But I did have some good teachers that taught us to think outside the box, and it has been a choice experience. But go ahead.
I challenge you, Wayne, to go to the website, www.freedomuniversity.org, take the initial quiz. I think there's 15 questions. Is that right, Dean?
I'm going to do it, Keith. I already decided I'm going to do it.
And take the first course. I think you'll send that in to Mark. Mark, who is one of the main employees of this great university, he will score your exam, and he'll generally do that within the first 24 to 48 hours. And after he gives you your score, he will give you a password to go on to course number two. And I frankly would like to encourage as many people as I can that are associated with my Constitution Club to see how many people that we can get to finish the curriculum and earn our degree in liberty. I think this is a tremendous goal, and I think anyone who is sincere needs to pay the price. They need to take personal responsibility to educate themselves. Don't don't look to the schools, but basically educate yourself. Take personal and individual responsibility. This is God's plan for us. We're not going to be held accountable collectively. We're going to be held accountable individually based upon the how we exercise our free agency.
Yeah, Keith?
Yes.
Yeah. I just now thought of this. I remembered one of my prior experiences with this. I had bought a Corvette from Lithia Motors there in Medford, Oregon, and they are known as the Medford Mafia. And they were very crooked in their dealings. And finally, I ended up putting a lemon sign on top of my Corvette and parading around town, and I ended up turning in, I think it was roughly 50 consumer fraud reports to the state, and basically shut down one of their dealerships when they pulled one of their stupid stunts. You can use some of these tricks of thinking outside the box to help limit the corruption in government, expose the creeps.
Well, thank you. I think that's an excellent point, that in order to hold people accountable, we cannot remain silent.
Yeah.
Let me go back to Chuck. Chuck, would you like to say something again?
Well, I was going to tell Dean, I'm going to go ahead and pass this on to our pastor here and kind of challenge him to go ahead and take it, because he really is into the Word of God, and we really enjoy having him over here. And like Wayne out there, I think I was very fortunate, too, up outside of Minneapolis there, graduating in 61, that we really had some great teachers and so forth. And one just passed away, and outstanding basketball coach, and you see the number of kids from our class and other classes, paying their condolences to his wife and that. But now we see what's happened to Minneapolis. You know, if anybody here has been in Minneapolis before, the city of lakes, nice, clean place and that, and how the government's changed so much. And actually, it's on the downhill slide to becoming another Detroit, joining those 10 cities there with the democratic form of government there. That's all I had, Keith.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Anyone else that has a comment or a question? If not, we'll just return the microphone here. We've got about another 15 or 20 minutes, and let's turn the time back over to Dean and let him pontificate.
Yeah, there was several, quite a few interesting things there that callers had mentioned. One of them was what Wayne talked about with the teacher who taught him to think outside the box. That's another example of someone going outside of the curricula, going outside of what they're normally supposed to be teaching. It's really related to the policeman going outside of what he's being told to do and doing what's right in spite of what the rule book says. That's been changed to be wrong, basically. The teacher there is teaching what's right in spite of what they're being told to teach. And that's pretty much the way, only way anybody's going to learn anything of any real importance in the school system. And I mean importance, I don't mean math's not important or science's not important. It is important on its own place and its level. As far as understanding higher things, understanding about social order, law and government and authority and our relationship to one another and our relationship to God, the only way you're going to learn anything that in any so-called public schools is someone teaching outside the box, someone teaching what's not in the curricula, what you're not really supposed to be teaching. And so the good teacher teaches what he's not supposed to teach, and when he does, he's teaching what he is supposed to teach, if you can understand that.
Well, one of the issues, Dean, that I think is very fascinating is when the children are taught about the Civil War, they are basically being taught essentially that Abraham Lincoln was a paragon of virtue, and that he was fighting for the emancipation of the slaves. This was his passion and all this, and we're told a whole lot of we're provided with a whole lot of information that is not historically accurate. We are given a lot of this information, and today, if you're a public school teacher and you were to make any sort of comment that was disparaging or questioned the honorable nature of President Lincoln, I'm sure that you would be called in front of the school board and you would be tarred and feathered in a very short order.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Thomas Woods calls that, refers to that. I don't know if he coined the term, but I think he calls it the cartoon version of history. They take history and make a cartoon version of it, and it's like this real simplified where you make somebody the bad person and somebody the good person, and and really there's very little morality between the two, and difference in morality between the two, but you make one good and one evil, because it fits with the story, the scenario,
Well, you know, if the government wants to make the people compliant, they want the people essentially to be good lapdogs. They want us essentially to be subjects, not sovereigns.
Well, and say again, it's not really the government that wants us to do that. It's really those in rebellion against the government
wants to. You're right. As we keep talking, you're gonna get it across to me that I've got to stop using that term government in a negative form. It's not government that's bad. It's the people who are in control of the government that are in rebellion against God and His plan.
It's actually okay to call them government as long as people understand what we're speaking about. There are really two kinds of government in that sense, but as long as you understand that the one is not really government. So it's really violent anarchy is really what it is. It's violent anarchy. All it does is violence, the extreme opposite of government. And as long as you understand it, that is kind of a form of government. And I don't know how much time we have left. One of my best examples to understand this, because people have real difficulty understanding this because they've never been taught it before. But if you understand the relation between the prison system in our society and the general society, then you can understand the difference between that system of rebellion that calls itself government and the actual law and government that God wants us to be under. And God gives us over to politics for the same reason we put people in prison, at least ideally, in the ideal situation. People won't obey the real standard. They insist on living by violence, robbing and stealing and murdering. And so we put them in a place that operates on their own standard. They live by violence, so we create a special social order where everyone in it is ruled over by the very violence that they sought to rule over others with in the general society. And that's what politics is. Politics is the prison system that God raises up and puts over societies in direct proportion to the degree that people are wicked and corrupt and deceived and ignorant. And only people who, by becoming righteous again, being called to obey God and developing that spiritual intellect to know the truth, can escape from that prison of politics by obeying the truth and rejecting the lie. Otherwise, because if I'm trying to make the society free and people are still wicked and corrupt and evil and they don't want to know what freedom is and they're not interested, I'm actually fighting against God. I'm actually warring against, in a sense, trying to overthrow what God has raised up, because God will only allow a spiritually reborn, alive, moral, righteous, intellectually mature people to be free. Those are the only people He wants to be free. Because in a sense, a government of injustice, which is not real government, is the proper government for people who are wicked and corrupt and evil. They get the very government that is of their own nature. And so the only way we can change the government is to change our own nature from that which is false and fake to that which is real. That's how we go from a fake, false government, which is not really government, it's politics rebelling against government, to a genuine government which obeys the truth by protecting everyone's liberty instead of always working to overthrow it.
Do you know the definition of the word politics, the derivation of the word politics? It comes from Latin, poly, which means many, and tix, which means bloodsuckers. So politics is many bloodsuckers.
That's like the modern version of it, but before that it was it comes from the Greek, which means the poly of the people and so forth, but that's the modern definition of it, the more modern version.
So basically, once again, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in tonight to listen to this broadcast. I'd like to encourage everyone to please visit the website, check it out. I think you'll find it incredibly enlightening. I think that if we're going to restore this nation, I think we individually have to be responsible to educate ourselves or re-educate ourselves. We have to be willing to think outside the box. We need to take a look at the paradigms that we've created in our lives. We need to question our beliefs. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson that said, you know, question everything. Don't accept anything that somebody tells you without using the God-given powers of discernment that you have, which was an endowment also from your Creator. So question virtually everything, and question the things that you have held dear for most of your life. You may discover that some of the things that you have believed in are not necessarily true. We need to have an open mind. We need to follow the truth, and we need to seek the truth wherever it may happen to lead. And we have to be willing to turn loose. One of the things that you're going to find out that when a lot of people are put into a position where their paradigms are put on the spot, they immediately defend their position. And they, frankly, oftentimes will criticize the person that is the messenger providing them with new information. There are a lot of people out there, for example, that don't want to believe that Barack Obama was born perhaps in a foreign nation and that he's not eligible to be president. And so rather than reading the facts and understanding the law, people will immediately make fun of or ridicule the people that are criticizing the situation. They have a certain belief that our system is just and fair, and when they're told that this is not necessarily true, they defend the status quo. When they're told that 9/11, there was some serious questions about what actually happened on 9/11, a lot of people don't want to believe that our government could be complicit in a crime of that magnitude. And yet when you really study the facts, you'll realize the fact that the information is very compelling, and that a person with an open mind who is willing to basically study this information, they're then in a position to be able to draw legitimate conclusions. But it takes guts, it takes courage to question your pre-existing paradigms.
Amen.
So the last chance, if anybody has a last comment you'd like to make. If not, we'll bring this call to a close. So anyone else that would like to speak up, please press number one on your keypad. I do have another caller here that just called in here. Area code 734. Is that Sherry again?
Yeah, it is me again. I've got one more question. I did find the site, and it's beautiful. But I have a question. In terms of our being aware of our slavery and thinking that we were free when we came to this country, does anyone have any factual backup data that we were, in fact, under the reign of foreign governments? When we first came here and established our government, that it was undermined by setting this whole system up to fail, that the contracts were already established, that through the wars that we anticipated, the civil and everything that we went through, and the contracting and getting the feds in here, that this was all pretty much a predestinated setup in order to terminate the freedom in this country. And because we are awake now, that we actually have the first opportunity to turn this around and to terminate that relationship with these investors, these foreign investors, and to establish our freedom for basically the first time upon our founding fathers putting those little needles of the haystack in those contracts, because they knew what was coming down the pike, that we were going to actually be conscious of the input from the beginning to you know, make us not free.
Yeah. Yeah,
does anyone have any of that data? Because I went through your first test, and anyhow, that was the thought that came up.
Yeah, that's a huge subject. You come at it from so many different angles. Basically, Christians 200 or 300 years ago, going all the way back to Christ, they were very aware of this conspiracy. They understood what was taking place. They understood that there were, principalities of darkness that were scheming and planning long term how to take over and control societies. And that's what much of the New Testament is about. And early Americans were aware of that, too. And so it's not like we're just now waking up for the first time. Christians, at least in intellectually mature Christians, were always aware of this. What's going on now is there is a reawakening going on that we probably reached the bottom about 20 to 25 years ago. And now there's a great awakening, a reawakening going on of this knowledge of God and God's kingdom and how far off track we've become. And that's, I think, what I would say on that subject for now without getting into too much detail.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry, for your comments. And Wayne and Chuck, thank you very much for your participation. We really appreciate your loyalty and your participation in these Blog Talk Radio shows. If any of you that are listening to this call this evening, if any of you would like to suggest a potential guest for me, you can contact me at Keith, K-E-I-T-H, Broders, B-R-O-A-D-E-R-S, Keith Broders, at gmail.com. If you contact me and let me know if there's someone in particular that you would like to have as a guest on the show. I'd also like to indicate that I've created a brand new website on Liberty. It's called the LibertyTreeUniversity.net. And if you go to LibertyTreeUniversity.net, you will have an opportunity to see a whole lot of really excellent videos on such people as Michael Badnarik, incredible, Thomas Woods, Richard Mayberry, Richard Mack, John Stossel, Judge Napolitano, Walter Williams, Larkin Rose. These are just a few of the individuals that we have video libraries on these spokesmen for Liberty. And there's also a great deal of information on the works of W. Cleon Skousen, his book, The 5,000-Year Leap, and also his textbook that he wrote called The Making of America. We have literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of educational material at the Liberty Tree University website. Again, LibertyTreeUniversity.net website. So we have just a few minutes left. If you have any parting comments, Dean, please feel free to go ahead and share them with us at this time.
Yeah, it's really time for everyone to join the awakening that's going on. We don't know how far it's going to go. We don't know if the whole country, in some sense, is going to return to God and we're going to be a free society again. You know, I have serious doubts about that. Whenever we are enlightened ourselves, and we basically create the kingdom of God around us. So when we're, we befriend people around us and join with them and love them and act peacefully with them, we create a community that is essentially the kingdom of God on earth. And essentially we fulfilled our duty toward God when we do that. Whenever we create a community of two or three or four or five or ten people, whatever it is, we have done our part. We've established the kingdom of God on earth, and everyone else has to decide whether they're going to do that or not. And if enough people do that, you end up transforming the whole society. But transforming the whole society is not my responsibility or your responsibility. Our responsibility is to transform the people around us. And God's responsibility to take care of the rest, and everyone else's responsibility toward God to do that. So we should take care of our responsibility, the community around us, our friends and community we can create the God's kingdom on earth. And let the cards fall where they may, if you will, and see how far it goes. It depends on how many people obey God and create God's kingdom around themselves.
Well, I think the most important document in American history is the Declaration of Independence. It's essentially our birth certificate. And in the Declaration of Independence, there were some things that were stated that are very, very important. One is that that there are certain truths that are self-evident, which means they're very obvious. And the Founding Fathers believed that it was a self-evident truth that we were sons and daughters of a divine creator, that we were endowed with certain rights. These rights included the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments are instituted among men deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. And we, the people, created the government by our consent, and we can dissolve the government by our consent, because in the Declaration it also states that it doesn't say if government becomes, but it says when a government becomes tyrannical and begins to abuse the powers that it was created to protect, it is not only the right, but it is the duty of the people to take action. The people need to either alter or abolish their government and to create a new government based upon the principles of liberty and individual responsibility. We individually need to understand those very basic principles, and that is precisely why the Freedom University is so crucial. Because you cannot function in upper division mathematics. You cannot function in algebra and trigonometry if you don't know how to add and subtract whole numbers. You need to have the basics. You need to have the foundation before you can understand these higher levels of understanding. And so it's really important that we educate ourselves. Once we educate ourselves, then we will be able to influence the lives of others in a positive way. So we need to take individual responsibility to learn as much as we possibly can so that we can become beacons of light and truth. And so once again, Dean, I'd like to just again thank you so much for being who you are and doing what you do and for your commitment to God and your commitment to teaching the people the principles of individual liberty and personal responsibility. So God bless you, and God bless America. Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for participating.
God bless.